No mix to the intro there. So this is Pure Decking for November 21st, 2014, the show about stuff that interests me. We just did 20 minutes worth of show before we realized the damn thing wasn't actually picking up TeamSpeak, so it was nothing but the occasional sound effects. So just real quick, on the panel tonight, BSV, Madman, Big Brother, we all have liquor of one form or another, or at least a beer.
And trying to forget the first attempt so we can do this fresh.
Correct. Yeah. So this is a show about stuff that interests me, like our current police state, information security, and drinking so I can sleep at night. Let's see. Station news, because we've already done it once, so it's boring to us to do it again. We're still running with the shirts idea. We're going to be using Redbubble as the site. It's going to end up like $20, $25 for a shirt. Posters are going to be about, you know, maybe 10 bucks cheaper than that. And we actually talked to Suave. He's digging through a bunch of the old art he made for the website, like the show banners and things like that, to try to find high-res versions of them so that we can send them off to this to our store here and get that kind of stuff made up. So we're going to keep the markup pretty low. The idea is less about us making any real money and more about just letting people get stuff. Like, you know, like we said before, who doesn't want an Agent Paranoia poster? So it stares at you while you try to sleep. Glows in the dark under black light in the bathroom where you want a black light. So anyways, any money we would make off of it would, of course, just go back into running the station. So we're going to skip the discussion topic for two reasons. One, we've already done it. And two, it didn't. Nobody really got as mad as I have. Everybody's just kind of accepted the horrible at this point. So
we've been beaten well.
Yeah, pretty much. I guess to give a quick summary of it, Google has a contributor program. So instead of paying ads, you just give them money. And then they're going to track what websites you go to and then give a portion of it to websites instead of showing you ads. Of course, the Google ads aren't the intrusive ones. We kind of all decided, yep, you're just going to run Adblock Plus and who cares, right? If you want to support a website, support them directly.
I think they're going to have the problem that the websites have been having when it comes to supporting them directly. Very few, if anyone, does.
And how many people actually contribute through Google?
I don't think very many will.
I'm really going to be disappointed if it turns out to be a lot of people doing that. So anyways, let's move on to current events here. So people listening to the stream, actually I heard nothing but silence this entire time. So for us, we had the first 20 minutes of the show. For everybody else, well, I'm sorry about that. First story up is from epigeek.com. And it was continuing off the discussion topic. Google and the European Union have a rocky relationship. The stranglehold Google has on search and search results is sometimes troubling to critics, with the European Commission charged with keeping a close eye on Google's going-ons. Several attempts by Google to satiate the demands of complainers has fallen short, while loud critics like the FOTU group continue to make... FOTU, really? It sounds like fuck you, doesn't it?
If it was Asian, I would so pull that in there.
Go for it. I want to hear that.
Fuck you!
Nice.
While loud critics like the Fuck You group continue to make their case that Google is gaming search to meet their own wants and needs. The latest solution might be the wildest yet, with the new reports... A new report alleges officials in the European Parliament are preparing to ask the EC, Commission, to have the Google separate search from the rest of its services. They're literally talking about splitting Google up.
And sounds familiar.
Uh-huh. Unfortunately for Google, this proposal is said to have the support of Parliament's two largest factions, the European People's Party and the Socialist Party. According to the Socialist Party is one of the largest European... Why am I surprised? Never mind. According to Financial Times, the European Parliament has no direct authority to split up a company like Google, but influences the Commission nonetheless. The motion's final language is still reportedly in the works, but will be decided upon ahead of a vote late next week. Now, this site also, this particular article also has a link to a video they put together of showing how Google is wonderful, and then they put in Google Plus and then became horrible, and how, you know, the European Commission should step in and force Google to separate Google Plus and just give you Google again. And it's like, did you miss the part of it where it's their fucking product and they can do whatever they want and there are other search engines?
That's what I was going to say. Terrible. You don't have to use Google, and I don't think anyone uses Google Plus.
Actually, a bunch of Linux people do, strangely enough.
Okay, because the one time I went in there, I heard crickets. Like, literally, transmitted over the Ethernet, there were cricket noises.
Well, there was that time Heavy brought in all those Google Plus people onto the show by holding this microphone up to the speakers. Yeah. So people do use it. It's just, again, it just feels to me like they're missing the point of, they've kind of decided that Google is like a utility, not a company. It's just like somebody made that decision somewhere along the line of, oh, no, you're not allowed to do that because you're the search engine. It's like, it's a fundamental misunderstanding of what the internet is and how this shit works. So,
or Liberty could just, I don't know, start posting lists of other search engines.
There's actually several of them. Most of them are terrible, but you know, Yahoo comes to mind. Bing is another one.
DuckDuckGo.
Just confused. They assume if you're a search engine, you can't and shouldn't do anything else?
Yeah, I think so.
I need more alcohol.
Like I said, drinking so you can sleep at night. You should go watch the video. It is absolutely awful. You will hate me for saying you should go watch the video in that article. Because it's painful, it's stupid, like I said, it's a fundamental misunderstanding of how this shit actually works.
But diversifying your business is a good thing.
Well, it's also Europe.
The only thing that this should diversify in Europe is the government over everything.
But the government doesn't diversify, it just...
Again, Europe.
By diversify, I mean just takes control over everything.
Okay.
All right. Next one up. This is interesting because I don't know anybody... I don't know if anybody else on the call has a good understanding of how SSL actually works. Like, you know, when you go to a secured website, HTTPS?
I've got a basic idea.
Basic idea? Okay. Well, just for the audience, then, when you go to a secured website, it uses, it's actually called TLS nowadays, you know, Transport Layer Security. The idea is that the server has a certificate, okay? And the certificate is basically a block of numbers that are assigned to that server. There's some hashing. It's a lot more complicated than that. I'm really dumbing it down here, so nobody send me angry emails. I actually do understand how SSL works. I'm trying to figure out how to explain it in a short period of time. So anyways, it has this cryptographic data. We call it a certificate. The certificate is assigned by a certificate authority. They generally cost money. And so when your web browser goes to it, your web browser has a big long list of certificate authorities it knows about already installed in it, and you can add more to it if you work at a company that runs any kind of a proxy server to see what you're doing on SSL. They'll probably install their own certificates. In fact, a lot of companies will install their own certificates into their work into the end user machines, just so they don't have to buy 100 certificates or whatever it is to set up, say, Cisco telecom and telepresence systems and stuff like that. So, anyways, so the certificate authority will validate the certificate, and there's actually certificate chains, and it gets very, very complicated. But the short version is your web browser checks the certificate to verify that, yes, it belongs to the domain that's handing it to you. So it's a way of saying, yes, this really is the website you're connecting to, and it's not a man in the middle. And then it uses the cryptographic information in that certificate. Well, not really. It uses the cryptographic information in the public part of the certificate, because there's a public and a private part. It's asynchronous encryption. So anyways, it uses the public key of the cert to generate something that only the server can decrypt, and then your client and the server will negotiate a secure tunnel. I probably did like no justice to that explanation at all, but were you guys anybody able to follow that?
Yeah.
It's okay. Like a big MD5 hash.
Pretty no, much. God no.
Simplified version, the website has a data or secured data that you check against known safe databases. Then once verified, they encrypt a connection between the two.
Close enough. We'll run with it.
Dumbed down version. Sorry, I'm drinking.
Me too. So, anyways, there's a new project out called Let'sEncrypt.org. And from their page, vital personal and business information flows over the internet more frequently than ever. But we don't always know when it's happening. And it's clear at this point that encrypting is something all of us should be doing. Then why don't we use TLS, the successor to SSL everywhere? Every browser and every device supports it. That's mostly true. Every server in every data center supports it. Again, that's mostly true. So why don't we just flip the switch? Because it costs money. And traditionally, server admins wouldn't want to turn it on, one, because it's a headache, but two, there actually is a cost in CPU and in negotiating connections to set up SSL. These days, it's minimal, but setting up that SSL connection does require certificate checking and handshaking and establishing the encryption. So it does put some fairly significant, it can add up, the overhead that it requires is required to do SSL on every connection. Now, once the connection's established, it's not bad at all. It's not very different from, you know, regular connections to a web server, but that initial connection is quite a bit larger, because it has to do all that handshaking we were talking about a minute ago. So, I'm not saying that using it everywhere is a bad idea. I'm just saying it is a little bit more involved than just flipping a switch.
There's opportunity cost involved.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Let's Encrypt is sponsored or supported by Mozilla, Akamai, Cisco, the EFF, and IdenTrust. Let's Encrypt is a new free certificate authority built on the foundation of cooperation and openness. It lets everyone be up and running with a basic server certificate for their domains through a simple one-click process. It's going to be free. Anyone who owns a domain can get a certificate validated for that domain at zero cost. It's automatic. The entire enrollment process for certificates occurs painlessly during the server's native installation or configuration process, while renewal occurs automatically in the background. That part scares the shit out of me. Secure Let's Encrypt will serve as a platform for implementing modern security techniques and best practices. Sure, it will. Transport all records of certificate issuance and revocation will be available to anyone who wishes to inspect them. Oh, that's transparent, not transport. I've been drinking too. open the automated issuance and renewal protocol will be an open standard, and as much of the software as possible will be open source. And cooperative, much like the underlying internet protocols themselves, Let's Encrypt is a joint effort between the entire community beyond the control of any one organization. Again, I show you the NSA. Okay, so all these companies have gotten together, and they're putting out this Let's Encrypt project, and there's a lot more to it. They're suggesting they're going to have scripts that you can add to, like, say, any Linux distro, where once you start setting up web server, it'll just handle going out and getting the certificates and setting them up. You know, that big complicated process we were talking about in the beginning. But it's still going to be one central database, one issuer for all of these things. And it's not like SSL certificate issuers haven't been hacked before. It's actually happened several times where a root cert gets out and people can make as many of their own as they want and spoof sites and all this craziness. And the automatic part terrifies me because you're going to have these scripts automatically checking in with some central server somewhere. And so if somebody ever manages to get their hands on that central server through whatever means, and God knows there's been enough ways out there.
It's a backdoor into your website that you set up yourself.
It's a backdoor into everybody's website. And I don't know that – I don't say that this is a bad thing. I mean, getting certificates out there is not bad, but it's all in one central location that you can have a nation state just kind of walk into and say, oh, no, you're putting our backdoor in there. And we're monitoring everything. I mean, it's just – because the way SSL works, if you have the root CA, you can make your own certificates and you could even revoke the existing ones and just take over domains. And it wouldn't even be a question. Like when they do domain seizures, the way that usually happens, you know, you go to a web page and see this domain has been seized by the FBI because they were sharing music. And God knows that's the worst crime you can commit on this earth is sharing music. We've all seen those, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So the way that works is that you should go to the DNS provider and point, you know, the domain name of a site to their server that's hosting that picture and saying it's host. Now, at the same time, they usually go to the ISP and try to get the original server shut down so it doesn't work, but they're pointing the name somewhere else. So if you have an SSL certificate, usually pointing it somewhere else won't work because the idea being that the website that's trying to hijack your domain won't have the proper certificate. But if they're all at a central location that the government can just go subpoena, they can issue a new certificate for that domain automatically. And the certificate at that point does almost nothing to protect ownership of the domain. I'm not sure that it really provides identity information anymore because at that point, there's no validation process in place. It's just literally anybody who asks for one gets one. So I guess it validates that whoever set up that certificate had control of the domain at the time. So what do you do for if somebody else manages to, say, hijack the DNS entry for your domain or at least spoof it to the servers for this thing for a few minutes? You're going to have a hard time getting a new SSL certificate if one already exists, especially through this system. I don't know. I just see so many problems with this that I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying you really, really need to keep an eye on it. And if you're going to trust this system, you need to understand what it is. So,
how are they authenticating the people that are getting the certs initially?
They're not.
Know with at least SSL, it's through the person paying.
Yeah, they're not.
So I can get, I don't know, a certificate for bankofamerica.bank since they're now opening a lot of new top-level domains.
You would have to beat Bank of America to registering that domain, but absolutely. And there have been court cases that have been forced people to hand over domains like that to companies. So unless you had another company that also happened to be named Bank of America, you'd have a hard time convincing a court not to force you to hand the thing over.
They generally force you to sell it.
Yeah.
But up until I sell it, there could be a lot of people trying to log into their bank accounts on my top-level domain.
Yeah, yeah. No,
I just own the name. I don't know what's on the website. Fuck it. Fuck.
Yeah, and you're right. I'm just trolling and setting it.
There's absolutely nothing to stop you from, you know, setting up one of those one-off domains, those are, you know, fairly common, the common misspellings and shit like that, and having it SSL encrypted, so they see the little lock up in their browser. Although, to be fair, relying on that lock's not exactly the best of ideas, because a common tactic scammers were doing for a long time was setting the favicon to the SSL lock for Internet Explorer.
Nice.
So... and people would say, oh, there's the lock. It's fine. I don't know. It's an interesting concept. It's not the first time free certificates have been out there. I don't think the last couple of ones to do free certificates have been as supported by, you know, the big names out there. And I kind of have a personal theory on Akamai that Akamai is how the NSA is tracking the internet. So having Akamai support doesn't really help from my perspective. So
I'm still just seeing the issue of the way we've been verifying people prior to this is who pays the bills is
yeah,
how we identify.
They have enough personal information to at least run a credit card, right? So
yeah, and I know people can steal credit cards and it happens all the damn time. But it was something. Like, Netflix CFO sent me a check. I know that I'm certifying Netflix. But with
Buses.
Anyone getting a cert...
First come, first serve doesn't seem like a safe method.
Yeah. I you know what it is, honestly, that's bugging me about this is SSL encrypting your traffic has been kind of a standard for letting you know that you're on the right site, that it's, you know, fairly trustworthy, that it's okay to do business with them kind of thing, right? It's been the indicator that it's not just some random ass blog or some quickie little site that somebody threw up there out there on the internet. It's a verification that somebody's actually serious about whatever it is they're trying to do on the internet, right? And so by taking that away and just making, oh, by virtue of owning a domain name, you get an SSL cert. I mean, okay, yeah, that's cool for, you know, circumventing people watching on the wires and the Wi-Fi attacks and a few other things out there. But it's not as though the SSL protocol is perfect. Hell, a lot of the SSL libraries have had problems lately. OpenSSL got beat up with Heartbleed not too long ago in the Poodle attack, which was not anywhere near as big as Google made it out to be, by the way. But, it, you know, that's a thing. And Microsoft just recently had a whole bunch of problems patching SSL on their servers. So, like Windows servers, the SSL implementation in those has got all kinds of problems right now. And it took them like 4 patches to get it right, and I'm still not sure they got it fixed. So, you know, I just... There's a lot of faith that's put in that SSL certificate for verifying that it's, yes, this is a good site, this is who you want to do business with. Because 9 times out of 10, a scammer wouldn't have them because, you know, an SSL cert, at least the last time I was pricing them, you know, averaged out to about $100 a year. And somebody running a scam website's not going to bother with that, right? But if they can bother with that now, that takes that check away. And even though it's kind of a, you could argue it's transparent, it's something we've trained in users to look for. And that's taking that litmus test away. That, am I making sense?
Yeah.
My cat is currently chewing on my arm. Ow! Sorry. Anyways.
But is there a good replacement for SSL?
Not really, no. There's a lot built up on it, and there's some ideas floating around about, you know, securing improved security on different parts of TLS, and there's some stuff in IPv6 that has encryption by default. But, you know, public-private key encryption, there's not really anything that matches it yet, and I'm not sure what a good replacement for it would even look like, you know, short of private networks.
Could you decentralize that type of server that was doing the authentication?
There's some theories out there about working with that for like distributed hash table based domain name and SSL encryptions. So there's some ideas floating around out there, but I've not seen anything concrete enough to really say, okay, yes, that's the solution.
Just because this isn't a good solution for SSL doesn't mean there shouldn't be anyone looking into it.
No, that's true. That's true. And like I said, I'm not immediately dismissing this. I mean, fuck, when they get up and running, we might use one of their certs for G15 just to get a cert up. But I kind of feel like it's going to take a degree of confidence you should see in sites that had it away. And that degree of confidence might have been misplaced. I'm not going to say it's, you know, not kind of a, you know, paper tiger, so to speak, but...
Well, it's easy to see if a site you normally go to that has it suddenly doesn't have it, something's up.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's very legitimate, if you know to look for it. Not everybody knows to look for it. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but fuck, I check pages before I put my passwords in them to make sure that they're SSL, or if I'm buying something online, I check. I've gone to the source code and even, you know, and submitted forms blank to see if they go to an SSL page before I, you know, I've actually gotten a couple of accounts locked out because I was checking out their security before I put my credit card in. It was hilarious. So... Yeah, the PayPal website's picky when you're messing with it, I'll tell you what. But
I'm going to say that's a good thing.
Kind of, yeah.
Like somebody's trying to figure out how to get into our website, and we have financial information.
It wasn't immediately apparent that that form was going to be SSL encrypted, and, well, I checked. Okay, so the burp suite might have been overkill, but... That's what I had at the time. All right. Next story up. This one's from Business Insider. China and one or two other countries are capable of mounting cyber attacks that would shut down the electric grid and other critical systems in parts of the United States, according to Admiral Michael Rogers, director of the National Security Agency and head of U.S. Cyber Command. I don't know how you get that title without just snickering all the fucking time.
Cyber Command.
I always find their live broadcasts on announcements funny.
Yeah, I just envision like one of the guys from the Weird Al All About the Pentiums video with a general's uniform on now. I don't know. I just The possibility of such cyber attacks by U.S. adversaries has been widely known, but never confirmed publicly by the nation's top cyber official. God, okay.
What he doesn't kills, need that title.
What kills me about, you know, putting cyber in front of everything is
does it
cyber
mean what
is,
you think it means?
No, it does not. Okay, cybering with somebody is slang for internet chat room sex.
I think we all know what cybering is.
Yeah, so Cyber Command, the top cyber official. I mean, it's childish, and it's up there with putting in bed at the end of your fortune cookies, right? But it kills me.
The commander walks in a room and he looks at everybody and says, "ASL, lol."
No. He says, "I'm casting level 9 cock of the infinite," and I'm putting on my robe and wizard
hat.
He says that when he walks into the room.
Oh, at a hearing of the U.S. House Intelligence Committee, Rogers said U.S. adversaries are performing electronic reconnaissance on a regular basis so that they can be in a position to disrupt industrial control systems that run everything from chemical facilities to water treatment plants. All of that leads me to believe it is only a matter of time. It's only a matter of when, not if we are going to see something dramatic, he said. Kids running in-map, fucker. I mean, it's just... Anyways, outside experts say the U.S. Cyber Command also has the capability to hack into and damage critical infrastructure, which in theory should amount to mutual deterrence. But Rogers, who did not address his offensive cyber tools, said that the nuclear deterrence model did not necessarily apply to cyber attacks, because high schoolers with keyboards can do those. I don't remember... Although I suppose this day and age, the plans for building nuclear bombs are out there on the internet, so I guess high schoolers could be bombing buildings with nukes, but...
Yeah, but with nuclear bombs, you have the problem of getting fissionable material.
You can
with cyber attacks, you have the problems of getting my laptop, which I bought at Best Buy.
What, you mean sale. Best Buy doesn't carry yellow cake?
I tried buying it there. They said they weren't a grocery store. So I went to Kroger. And they looked at me weird. Apparently it should be on the baking aisle, and they just never restock it. I found yellow cake, but there was no uranium.
All right. So, only a handful of countries had nuclear capability during the Cold War, he said, and nuclear attacks could be detected and attributed in time to retaliate, which is true. It's very hard to tell. You know, attribution is hard because, you know, proxy servers exist. By contrast, the source of a cyber attack can be easy to disguise, and the capability to do significant damage is possessed not by only by nation states, but by criminal groups and individuals. Yes, if you know how to use Metasploit, you are a criminal group, apparently. Rogers noted, in cyberspace, you can literally do almost anything you want, and there is not a price to pay for it, the NSA director said. Oh, there's a price to pay for it. It's usually $14.95 a month for your dial-up. Rogers remarks about... I was going to make an AOL joke, and I changed it at the last minute. Rogers' remarks about critical infrastructure attacks came in response to questioning from Republican Mike Rogers of Michigan, who chairs the Intelligence Committee. He asked the NSA director about a private report detailing China-based intrusions into the power grid and other critical systems that appear to be precursors to attack. And what other countries the chairman wanted to know have that capability? One or two others, the NSA director said, but he declined to name them, saying that the information is classified. We're watching multiple nation states invest in this capability. Let's see here. There'd be Russia, China, Britain, us, Australia, Israel, Iran thinks they are. I'm not sure how effective they are, but they claim they are.
Don't forget Canada.
Canada, both the Koreas, actually, although the northern one is, you almost know they're working for the government. And there was I'm forgetting a couple of others. A lot of the European countries actually would have the capability.
Yeah, so, you list India.
India, yes, that was the one I was trying to remember. Thank you. Rogers said the Obama administration is seeking to establish a set of international principles governing military cyber operations, such as banning attacks on hospitals.
But we blow up hospitals. You don't fix this with a treaty. If it's a problem, you go back to, I don't know, the way it was set up in the 70s and 80s where they weren't on the fucking internet.
Yeah, if the system's that critical, you air gap it. I guess I don't understand why this is hard.
Yeah, it's hard to attack something from the internet when it's not attached. I haven't figured out an internet that actually crawls from one set of wires to the other.
You know, there was that hack they did where they were using the FM radio from a monitor, but I mean, the range was like, you know, across the room.
Didn't they get into the mess up the refinement in one country by...
Yeah, you're thinking of Stuxnet screwing with the centrifuges in Iran, and they did that with USB keys, but I mean, that thing ended up in so many other places that it's not... you're not going to see a lot of people pulling that kind of thing. The thing is that, you know, they're immediately saying, oh, it's China. The thing with China, you have to understand, and this is actually true of Russia and a lot of the other countries you commonly hear people blaming all these cyber attacks on, is that they don't enforce intellectual property laws. So when a Chinese or a Russian citizen pirates Windows, nobody over there gives a shit. Like over here, if a home user does it, you're probably not going to get in trouble. But if a business does it a lot, they can really get in legal trouble quick. Over there, nobody cares. So you have all these businesses that just use copies of Windows from the Pirate Bay, right?
They're pre-owned.
Exactly. They've already got botnets and attack tools and shit in them. So... because of that, there's a large number of bots running in these countries. And so all the attacks are going to look like they're coming from these bots. Now, they might be orchestrated from within China. They might not. It's literally impossible to say, because what you're seeing is the end of the attack, not the command that sent it. So... I guess, you know, so when they say attribution is hard, they're right. But they keep blaming nation states for a lot of this stuff, and I don't think it's nation states.
I don't think it's entirely nation states. China does do industrial espionage.
I'm not saying nation states don't do it, but there are companies in those parts of the world, because again, their local government doesn't give a flying fuck about hacking foreign countries. As long as they don't hack local, they don't care. There are companies in China that's what they do. They break into other companies in Europe and the States and Australia and that kind of thing because there's no legal ramifications for it. Steal the information and then, sell it locally to the manufacturers.
We're not going to have China, Russia, or even a company in China or Russia attack our infrastructure.
For lots of reasons. The most straightforward one is there's no point.
Oh, the big reason is we're a fucking customer.
Yeah, exactly. There's no point in crippling us if we owe them money.
If China cripples us, their economy goes to shit and there are riots in China's streets. Whereas in America, if we have low to high single digit growth, we think it's wonderful. If China doesn't have double digit growth, its unemployment skyrockets because of the number of new people entering the workforce. So if they cripple their business partner in any way, they have riots in the street because people can no longer afford to buy rice. And this is a country that people are used to eating two meals a day.
Yeah.
So the country attacking us isn't going to be an issue.
So let's call this what it really is. The cyber commander here? What was his name? Michael Rogers. This is him angling for budget, is what that really is.
Well, he's not even angling for a good thing to do with the budget. He's not talking about air gapping or even hardening us against EMI. Because the U.S., unlike Russia, hasn't upgraded our power grid in case, I don't know, someone decided to drop a nuke in the upper atmosphere above any of our major cities to try to fry all of our electronics. That doesn't work as well in Russia. They hardened their power grid. We didn't. And the budget he's angling for doesn't even address issues like that. It's not talking about let's air gap our utilities. Let's get infrastructure off the interwebs, and oh yeah, let's put, I don't know, a Faraday cage or something around a power plant. I don't know how you would actually harden it against electromagnetic attacks. I just know the technology exists.
Yeah, so again, this is just angling for money and fear. Fear porn.
It's my favorite.
I just need a bigger budget to continue cybering.
But the what's pissing me off is the bigger budget isn't even going to fix the problem. It's going to spy on me. And yes, I talk about overthrowing the fucking government all the time, but it's my damn right. I'm a citizen.
Yeah.
That is terrorist talk.
Well, they can fuck me. And will. With a red hot poker. But until then, I'm a free American. And they shouldn't spy on me without probable cause. And a warrant.
All right, let's go to the next story here. This one's from Bloomberg. Yahoo has replaced Google as the default search engine on Firefox browsers in the U.S. as Yahoo Chief Executive Officer Marissa Mayer seeks out more partnerships to boost the web portal's traffic and revenue. Google has been the automatic search engine option for the internet browser developed by Mountain View, California-based Mozilla Corp. since 2004. Under the agreement announced yesterday, Google, Microsoft's Bing, and other search services will be available as alternatives, number 3 ranked Mozilla said in a blog post. Mayer, who has been working to turn around the Sunnyvale, California-based company since taking the helm 2 years ago, is looking for ways to bolster Yahoo's search business, which makes up about 40% of sales, minus revenue paid to partner sites. Earlier this year, Yahoo, which depends on Microsoft for its search technology, yeah, Yahoo uses the Bing search engine, which I find is hilarious. Struck a deal with Yelp Inc. to deliver content from the review website. At Yahoo, we believe deeply in search. It's an area of investment, opportunity, and growth for us, Mayer said in a statement. This partnership helps us to expand our reach in search and also gives us an opportunity to work closely with Mozilla to find ways to innovate more broadly in search, communications, and digital content. Yahoo's blah, 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 blah. So anyways, this is the other part of the article I cared about. Firefox has lost ground to other browsers, according to the net market share. In October, it held 14% of the global market, compared with 21% for Google's Chrome and 58% for Internet Explorer. I can't believe that many people still use Internet Explorer.
Sadly, they do.
It's what comes with by default, and it's what a lot of people just use. But still, really?
I wonder if how much they count to people actually using it or it being on their computer, since I've tried to uninstall it multiple times. That thing is a pain.
Well, that's a fair point, and a lot of businesses require it. Hell, when I'm working from home, I have to pop it open to get logged into a few things because the software just doesn't work in anything else. Good old ActiveX. But I just... Really? 58%? Anyways, the interesting part here is, wasn't the Google deal like 80% of Mozilla's revenue?
I believe so. What are they...
They had another thing where they were going to start putting ads in the landing page for Firefox. But you could turn them off. So, it was like literally going to be, you could just turn it off. So, I don't know, you know, not to mention the AdBlock plugin, but...
I feel like they're shooting
themselves
in the foot
with this. Maybe Yahoo gave them a bunch of cash.
I get, they must have.
How much cash does Yahoo really have, though?
A ton, dude. Okay.
They're actually a fairly large player. It's just they don't. Their search engine is not really their source of revenue anymore, is it? I mean,
they just got a big chunk due to Alibaba going public. This is very nerdy financial stuff, but it kind of plays into this story. So, for a long time, if you wanted to purchase stocks in a company called Alibaba, which is out of China and sells more stuff than pretty much every U.S. retailer combined, the only way you could get that stock in the U.S. is to buy stock in Yahoo, because Yahoo had a dude in China that was willing to sell them that stock. So that was bolstering Yahoo's price and worth a great deal. And when Alibaba went public in the U.S., which was the largest initial public offering in history, Yahoo got a ton of cash because they bought into Alibaba when it was like three nerdy Chinese dudes in a basement trying to sell motors.
Well, Yahoo has bought a ton of other companies. Like they own Flickr and a whole bunch of other services.
Delicious.
Yeah, delicious, because they made a whole bunch of money early on when they were the search engine to be using. And they invested that, and they've been able to stretch that investment out for a long time. So, I mean, they're not unprofitable, but they're not... I don't know, they kind of... You know, of course, they're the second stringer now, but apparently it's still enough to really make a lot of money.
Well, the problem is they haven't been developing what they were initially known for.
Well, it wasn't even their search engine. It was the fact that they had that directory. Which, that used to be the shit for finding things versus just going through a search engine. So that was, of course, that was back in the GeoCities days. Didn't they buy GeoCities now that I think about it?
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
When you said they became the default browser, I had to pull up Mozilla again. I'm like, I'm pretty sure not.
No, not yet. Not yet. The contract expired. It's going to be like in the new versions. And I'm assuming if you've already got it installed, they're not going to go changing your settings. So.
About config. That's it.
Yep. Next story up is from The Guardian. And this is funny because I saw the original Reddit post they wrote this off of before I saw the story. E-cigarettes may be better for your health than normal ones, but spare a thought for your poor computer. Electronic cigarettes have become the latest vector for malicious software, according to online reports. Many e-cigarettes can be charged over USB, either with a special cable or by plugging the cigarette itself directly into a USB port. That might be a USB port plugged into a wall socket or a port on a computer. But, if so, it means that a cheap e-cigarette from an untrustworthy supplier gains physical access to a device. A report on social news site Reddit suggests that at least one vapor has suffered the downside of trusting their cigarette manufacturer. One particular executive had a malware infection on his computer, from which the source could not be determined, the user writes. After all traditional means of infection were covered, IT started looking into other possibilities. The Made in China e-cigarette had malware hard-coded into the charger, and when plugged into the computer's USB port, the malware phoned home and infected the system. Rick Ferguson, a security consultant for Trend Micro, said the story is entirely plausible. Production line malware has been around for a few years, including photo frames, MP3 players, and more. And in 2008, for example, a photo frame produced by Samsung shipped with malware on the product's installed disk. Even more concerning is the recent proof of concept attack called Bad USB, which involves reprogramming USB devices at the hardware level. So I'll have a link to the Reddit post in the show notes, too, because it's pretty funny. It's actually on Tales from Tech Support, where they went over and over and over again and figured out the guy had bought some $5 e-cigarette battery off eBay. And, that's where the malware got on his computer from.
That's horribly awesome.
Isn't it? It's the exact same thing as the old photo, digital photo frame attack that was going on a few years back, except now they're just, e-cigarette batteries. So
it's terrible and really, really cool. I mean, I assume that my router from China already came preloaded with malware. I can assume that my vapor does too. I'm pretty sure the little caffeine sprit shit will just malware my DNA.
Just as long as you don't start looking like an Asian.
I've been eating more and more rice, dude. You should not eat the shit. That's 3 times a week.
All right. I don't know. Big, you got anything on this one?
No, I'm just glad my battery pops out. So I've got a separate charger for it.
All right. Next one. Last one? No, next to last one. Is from Torrent Freak. Psychro sent me this story. After several false takedown notices from major record labels, Mega has now terminated the cloud hosting account of its founder, Kim.com. The incident shows that Mega takes copyright infringement seriously and that it's also vulnerable to abuse. .com has been using Mega to share his first music album, Good Times, with anyone who wants to give it a spin. While he holds all the rights, several prominent music labels kept informing Mega that the album was infringing. A few weeks ago, Torrent Freak learned that the takedown requests were all inaccurate and triggered by a prankster. However, that apparently doesn't stop them from actually coming in, and as a result, .com has now had his Mega account terminated for repeatedly violating the terms of service. Now, this article goes on talking about how that means things are serious and blah, blah, blah. And that they had an update that the account's been reinstated because it was from false takedown notices. But let's be really real here. This is a publicity stunt. Why else would you terminate? I mean, surely the people running the thing would go, yeah, that guy works for us. Oh, he's the boss. Let's, let's turn his account off. That'll be funny.
It depends on how automated that system is.
Well, I mean, I've automated a file sharing complaint system before, but I didn't trust the automation to actually, disable people's accounts. I still wanted a human to look at it. So, I don't know. But, if it is automated, that's even worse because that means anybody can spoof these damn things because they come in via email form letters. So all you got to do is write a little script to spoof them. Just ask any spammer how to do that. I'm sure they can get all kinds of information on doing that. And, just shut down any Mega account you want with false DMCA claims.
Well, how many YouTube channels have lost their funding because of crap claims?
Yeah. At least I can explain those. The Mega ones, all it does is shut them down. I guess it's just a way of shutting people up.
Well, they didn't want to have their servers seized again.
I can't say I blame them on that. But that's
a completely legitimate business model.
Yeah. It's a publicity stunt. Why would you make a big deal out of banning? We banned our founder for DMCA. Oh, and they're false. Yeah, sure. Something tells me he could, he probably had that solved within a phone call. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Like, I'm fairly certain even if it was automated, he just called and said, it's my album. Flip it back on.
Yeah. I mean, he founded the fucking company. I'm sure that they didn't do this without planning it out. It's like, oh yeah, we can make a big deal out of this.
So. Hell, it's probably his idea. They probably got some of the DMCA DA takedown notices, and he said, fuck it. You know what? Let's make this into a thing.
I could see that. So, like, it's a publicity stunt.
I mean, Nintendo served themselves with DMCA compliance.
Yep.
Yeah, they have. So,
the shit right. Like this happens.
It does. All right, last story. This is from fool.pk. A new NASA research project will pay $5,000 a month. The research will track down the effects of zero gravity space travel on the human body and will be carried out in the Johnson Space Center in Houston, Texas. All you have to do is stay in bed and pass time while researchers perform some tests on you. All you need to be able to do is clear an Air Force medical examination and be a non-smoker. If you can do that, then you're on for this rest-to-earn policy of NASA. During the first 15 days, you'll be allowed to freely wander in a specially designed bed, rest, and carry out normal activities. You will partake in various tests to find out the normal state of your bone, muscle, heart, and circulatory system, brain and nervous system, and vesicular inner ear balance system, as well as your nutritional condition and your ability to fight off infections. After the 15 days, you get to spend an entire 60 days in bed. Laying in bed 60 days.
Sweet.
You do realize that means shitting in a bedpan, right?
I don't care.
I imagine bed sores.
Yeah, while the tests will continue. After the last 14 days will serve as a recovery period where you begin the process of regaining muscle strength and readjusting to a normal life. Also, you're required to stay awake for 16 hours a day with 8 hours fixed for sleeping when the lights will go off. In the 16 hours you are awake, you can watch television, play games, read anything you'd like, learn a foreign language, meet visitors for a fixed interval of time, etc. $5,000 a month. Been 2 months lying in bed.
$5,000 a month, that's $10,000.
That's what the article says.
I want to do this. I'm sure I can work for...
You're helping NASA.
Exactly.
My job I could do from my bed. I just need to get permission.
That's kind of cool, isn't it? I mean,
it's terrible and I would die, but I'd still think about doing this for $10,000.
Can you pass an Air Force medical exam?
God, no. That's what they give people to get into the damn Air Force. I'm way too fucking fat, and I can't run that far.
Bad question. Can you fake one?
Toasty! I can try. It's like, can we study the effects of zero G on fat, lazy people?
There's a future tourist industry, right?
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's do this. That's not the right digital dojo.
We've been having use an e-cigarette.
There, I fixed it.
Thank you. So yeah, that was. I need to make new bumpers for the show. Anyways, I found a sound pack from a whole bunch of old kung fu movies, so it's like I'm gonna have some fun. But anyways, so the very first thing I have up for Digital Dojo tonight is a YouTube compilation. It's a compilation of hacking scenes from movies in the 90s, and most of them are really bad. So, we were all laughing at it earlier, so I've got to include that, right?
I mean, there's some classics in there. Johnny Mnemonic, of course, the Hackers movie.
Yeah.
Lawnmower Man. Fuck yeah.
Yeah, they had Lawnmower Man in there. They had the scene Jurassic from Terminator Park. 2.
Yes.
Yeah, they had Jurassic Park.
I think the scene from Terminator 2 is the only realistic scene in there.
No, it did the whole we're counting down your password and figuring it out one digit at a time. That's not how that shit works.
No, it's not, but compared to everything else with like 3D flying shit, it's the most realistic.
Yeah, it looked a little bit better. I had the scene from Independence Day, you know, uploading the virus to the aliens. You know, bullshit like that. So, because, you know, the aliens use TCP/IP, right?
Of course. It's the most advanced communications protocol.
Yeah, that's how that works. All right. After that, next thing up, we have a tool. It's on resistsurveillance.org. This is pretty specialized, but I thought it was worth a look. It's called Detect, and it's spelled with a K. D-E-T-E-K-T. It's a free tool that scans your Windows computer for traces of Finn Fisher and Hacking Team RCS, commercial surveillance spyware that has been identified also to be used to target and monitor human rights defenders and journalists around the world. This is specifically it's targeting malware that governments are known to use to monitor people.
Interesting.
So, it's worth a look. It's very specific. Like, this is not replacing your antivirus, right? But if you think you might have something on your machine, or if you just happen to go through, say, TSA security on a regular basis, it's probably not a bad idea to run this. At least then it'll give you a hint if something's on your box. Now, my understanding was that some of this malware was, you know, some of the government malware is so hilariously bad you'd know it was on your box just by the way it was running. But still, you know, and it's a detection tool for this specific purpose. So I think it's almost a political statement that somebody put it out. I would not expect this to be maintained and updated on a regular basis, but for now, useful tool. And finally, to close things out, at StantonSpaceBarn.com, he's put together a very nice tool. This is, you know, you got to have a distraction, right? Some of us have been playing the Star Citizen Alpha. This is a tool for building a custom controller mapping, and Star Citizen stores its mappings in XML files. So this is a tool for building out a very custom one directly on the website, building out XML, and being able to just drop it into Star Citizen and have your own custom control mapping, because the in-game mapping editor is wanting. So if you're not into the Star Citizen beta, well, or alpha, I guess. Alpha? Pre-alpha. I mean, they're like still writing the thing, so it's a nice tool if you're playing Star Citizen. If not, hey, it's distraction, right? Go watch the YouTube video of bad hacking. So
now I want to play Star Citizen while doing that 60 days in bed for NASA.
That's a good parallel. I like it.
Can I become an astronaut after this?
Now I'm practicing flying my spaceship. Anyways, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Peer decking every Friday. Lore has got a couple of shows going on now. Tomorrow, I believe he's doing Drunken Anime Plot. He said he's going to try to do them live on the stream. Again, the stream's having problems. I need to find a new host. And it's gotten hilariously behind. Not really much I can do about it right now, but we are working on it. So Lord's got his shows he's doing regularly again, live since we get the system going again. Of course, the Galaxy 15 radio site, the Twitter handle, the feedback forum, the subreddit, the IRC channel, and soon the store, of all things.
Awesome.
So, yeah, keep an eye on everything, and that's really all I've got for tonight. Anybody got anything before I start trying to close out the show?
Shoot the Noise, tentatively, we'll come back sometime next year. You know, it's the holidays right now. Shit's kind of busy. But I'm wanting to bring it back. So look for that, maybe.
So by next year, do you mean like 2015 or 2016? Or
2015.
Like, you know, within, like by November of next year.
Within, like, I guess 6 months or so. No.
Oh, well.
No. Probably about four.
First quarter of
2015. Yeah, first quarter of 2015. If you want to get all businessy.
All right. Well, in that case, then, I think it's time to
If you have any discomfort during the experience, please signal a facilitator.